want to get high, man?
That stimulates your mind.
Get up, Chucky!
What have we got here? Fucking comedian.
Rogan Kim?
Hello, and welcome to the Rogan Kim Cast. It's me, Rogan Kim. Thank you so much for joining me today. I am experimenting with a video component so that you can all see my stupid face, but here it is. As I rant and rave yet again for God knows how long, there is no real time limit or any kind of formatting, really. It's not really a show per se. I think maybe what I've done is leave the record of a madman, the ravings of a madman, possibly. Will it be anything more than that? Who knows? Doesn't really matter. An asteroid can hit the Earth, and then what does it matter? It doesn't really matter anyway, but it's fun. And I think that's worth having in this life, this short yet long life of ours. So thank you for giving up part of your lives to listen or watch, which is even more. I mean, at least if you're listening, you could do other stuff. But if you're watching, oh my God, it's like doing comedy again. You're like, you have to watch me. Is that, well, you could always pause though, which I think would improve stand-up comedy, you know, like live stand-up comedy. If you could somehow pause the person or mute them, that's what it should be, because pause might be inconvenient to other people. So if every person could somehow have an individualized mute button or like change the channel or something, I don't know. It's something to think about. It's a case for the nano machines in our brains, right? We can improve comedy by adding a mute function to our brains and pipe in mute. Maybe you want to pipe in different music. The people at your table, you would all rather listen to some, electronic G Jones. I'm just throwing that out. That was in my head. Okay. That's in my head because my friends from TEM, I don't know if I do this, I don't have the monitor on. I put the logo up. Hold on. Put the logo up. Where is it? Here we go. There you go. There you go. For a big shout out to my TEM brothers, who basically told me they were listening to my podcast as they made their road trip to Red Rocks to see G Jones. Very much appreciated. Thank you guys from the bottom of my heart. We've been making some memes, some AI memes. We've been doing some good work out there. We've been doing some good work out there, fellas. This stuff is really interesting because it's just another tool. Now, some people say we're summoning demons by messing with the AI, and that might be true, I guess. I don't know. I don't really believe in that. I don't know. Maybe it doesn't matter if I believe it or not. Did it get really dark? It might have gotten really dark. This is the other aspect. No, it's fine. All right. The other aspect of having the video component is I'm self-conscious of the video thing. And now the audio listeners, they're just going to have to listen to me babble on and on about the video, which they probably don't even want to see. Anyways, big shout out to my friend Jeff, who lent out the use of his GPUs, which are his gay processing units. He's got a rig. They were once used for mining crypto, but now it's less gay, still gay eye, right? He's created gay eye rigs out of his gay processing units in tandem so that we can make more based memes, okay? Because the establishment AI, Bing and whatever, they're cringe, okay? They're making cringe AIs because they don't let you have freedom of speech. You can't say certain words or describe certain things or anything like that. I tried to make a meme of an elderly Asian lady standing over a young black man holding a taser or something, and it wouldn't let me, okay? And I was just simply describing an event that is possible, right? It wasn't even, she didn't have a gun. She didn't have I said that they were all smiling, and it was you know, like a Pixar like thing. You know, that's how they're making those Pixar memes that you see out there. They're getting very creative with the language. You have to get increasingly creative with the language to defeat the AI filters that are put in there by politically correct humans that want to control your speech and your thoughts. And of course, the only backlash, the obvious backlash to that is based AIs, right? Like other decentralizing the AIs from these establishment centers and allowing people to make pepes holding guns. All right. What's wrong with that? It's a frog, frogs holding guns. All right. I mean, the last election cycle, they demonized Pepe the Frog and turned him into a white supremacist symbol. And that just, of course, spawned infinite memes of all sorts, right? You could, yes, there are indeed racist Pepes out there, okay? There are many Pepes out there. That's the thing. Just like people. Pepes are people. People are Pepes. Get it? Okay. Racist Pepes, okay? There's also not non-racist, hilarious Pepes. There is also racist, hilarious Pepes. A lot of Pepes are hilarious. Some Pepes are not. Okay, Pepes are Pepes, okay? Pepes are strange when you're a stranger. All right, I'm going to move on. Anyways, it's just everything is on this based cringe spectrum now. Is it based or is it cringe? That's sort of how we're defining the world. It makes things, it used to be, was it dope or whack? That back in my day, it was all a dope to whack spectrum. Like that's dope and that's whack, you know, stuff like that. Or there's also, cool and retarded. That was, I remember that spectrum as well. Dude, that's totally cool. That's so retarded. You know, but now everything is based or cringe. Okay. Obviously we've come a long way, you know, we've really evolved and now we have the based to cringe spectrum. I wonder if it is truly a spectrum, you know, being older now, I could look back at the different dichotomies of the past. And perhaps it's a false dichotomy, but perhaps what it really is more of like a based cringe yin yang, cringe bang. No, I gotta figure out a good pun for that, but you know, it's like within all things that are based there is an element of cringe, and all things that are cringe there's an element of based, you know. And it makes sense because, you know, it's the duality of things, how one thing informs the other, right? You don't know what good is unless there's evil and so on, and you don't know what life is without death and so on, stuff like that. So, you know, this based cringe thing is, it's a lot deeper than you think. You know, it's a circle, a never-ending wheel. All right. So I guess the big news is about Gaza. Of course, we're all talking about Gaza. Apparently, my friends who were listening to a past podcast said that I was talking about the train derailment in East Palestine, and I guess I was relating it to Gaza. I have no idea what I said. Okay, I was probably high. It was a while back. I don't remember. I don't remember the things other people say. Why would I remember the things I? Okay, anyway. But I think what it kind of triggered in my head was, you know, this whole the thing going on. This thing going on in Israel and Palestine or Gaza or wherever, you know, wherever you want to call it, which I always thought was a funny phrase, funny thing, because it kind of makes you feel like there's two countries going at it. It's always like this idea that two countries are going at it, right? You got two armies going at it, and really it's not. It's one army versus a bunch of people who have not. I mean, I guess they're getting stuff from other people, but it's like, if you think of who's David and Goliath in this scenario, you know, Israel is definitely the Goliath, right? They have all the advanced weaponry. They have the might of the U.S. behind it, the money behind it. They got a lot of stuff, right, going for them. They got the nukes. They got everything. But of course, the terror is the problem, they say. The terrorism from the terrorists that were originally created by the people fighting the terrorists now, which also seemed to have happened in the Iraq war that we did, where Al-Qaeda was really, Osama bin Laden was part of the Mujahideen that fought the Soviet Union, that was trained and funded by guess who? Huh? Guess who? Yes, the CIA, the West, we did that. Okay. Same thing with these Muslim fundamentalists that were so bad that we fought the war on terror on. Oh, there's evil Muslim how did they get all these weapons and training? You know why? Because back then we were fighting commies. So in order to fight the commies, we would arm the Islamic fundamentalists because the commies didn't like religion and we're trying to get rid of Islam. And the Islamists were like, nah, fuck that. And so the enemy of my enemy is my friend. We armed those people. We gave them all that stuff. Saddam Hussein. We armed Saddam Hussein in the Iraq-Iran war. Back then, Iraq was on our side. We liked Iraq, okay? Because we didn't like Iran because of the whole hostage crisis. That whole thing really sucked. So we were like, we're going to fund a war between Iraq and Iran. And Saddam Hussein is the guy we helped. Right. And then, of course, 10 years later, we're like, oh, Saddam Hussein's got to go. He's such a brutal dictator that we had nothing to do with Gaddafi. Same thing. Oh, Mubarak in Egypt, over and over. All these regimes propped up by the West, right, to fight the enemy back then. And then they became the new enemy. Isn't that fun? Isn't that great? Hamas, also created by the IDF, CIA to fight the PLO, right? It's the same thing over and over. And now they're the bad guys. Same thing with ISIS, you could say. ISIS, probably created by the CIA, right? Then they became the enemy. Then guess what? In order to fight ISIS, guess what we did? We armed Al-Qaeda, okay, in Syria and Iraq. We armed Al-Qaeda, the guys we created to become our enemies the first time. We had a second batch of guys we created that we became the new enemy. And they were like, okay, we got to fund and back the first guys to fight the second guy. Do you see how ridiculous this is? Do you see that what the grift is? The grift is perpetual war. It's perpetual war and the excuse for whatever, you know, I think in Israel's case, the perpetual war is this messianic religious one where I think they really believe they have to reclaim the Holy Land and construct the third temple, bring about whatever it is they think they're going to bring about, and also probably take back what was once the Khazarian Empire, which is in the Ukraine, which is probably why you see these hotspots going on right now. But anyways, of course, 20 years prior to that, the U.S. has been embarking on a bloodletting and a bloodbath. For 20 years, we killed over, 2 million Iraqis, okay? We killed all these people, killed people everywhere. We went from 2 wars to 7, so we're just drone bombing the shit out of everybody. We don't even have a record of who we're killing. We don't know. And just like in Gaza, okay, what should be known is when we do these killings, when we do these bombings, most likely a bunch of kids. If you looked at the stats from the Obama era about the drone bombings, they had something like a 98% failure rate, meaning 98% of the time they're hitting people that weren't even the target. Okay. So they killed 100 people and 2 of them were the bad guys. And the rest of them were family and friends, kids, you know, but it's just like our drone cell phone plan, right? Your family and friends are free, right? You get to include for one drone bombing, we can kill one terrorist. We get to kill about 49 other people just for you, free of charge. And this shit is expensive. It's a lot of taxpayer money, a lot of taxpayer money going into the hands of these weapons manufacturers, right? And all those weapons manufacturers, of course, have executives and everybody, stockholders. All these people get paid off of that, right? And then the more war and conflict there is, the more money there is to be made. Both sides being armed, both sides having some justification. Yeah, keep fighting. Gotta keep fighting. Can't stop. Don't stop. right? Or else the gravy train will stop. Do you like having stuff? You like your nice whatever it is you like to buy, what, you know, your cool shoes or whatever, or your fucking outfits, or your, you know, whatever you like that stuff. Well, okay, we got to do this then, keep the economy rolling. All right, we need the money. All right, we need the money, so we have to keep killing. Okay, we just have to keep killing until it's inconvenient. And once, you know, the killing comes to you, then actually that gives us a reason to declare war again. So let's just keep it up. Yeah. And I wonder what the outcome of all that that's going to be. What's going to be the end of that? What's going to be the end result? Everybody just killing each other. I wonder. It'll probably be good. That's, you know, I'm probably a lot of good will come out of it. Like, people will be happy that it happened. People will be like, oh, I'm so glad we did this. It's a good thing. I'm glad everyone's dead. I don't know who will say that everybody's dead. Maybe aliens will come and be like, I'm glad everyone's dead. I don't know. Maybe they're like, this show is getting bored. This show is fucking sucking. This is the best outcome for the show. A sort of Hamlet-like ending where everybody just ends up killing each other. And then, a messenger comes and is like, hello. And then everybody's dead. The messenger has to be an alien because everybody's dead. It's not a good play. I mean, I don't know. I guess it'd be like if you're watching the play and everybody in the audience dies too, right? I guess that's art. It's very artful, but there's nobody around to appreciate it, you know? So if somebody makes art by himself in the forest and there's nobody around to see it, did he really make the art? Did he? I don't know. I didn't see it. Could be lying. Could be making stuff up. Is there even a forest? I don't know. You're just telling me stuff. You're just saying words. I mean, and by you, I mean me. So Gaza, okay, here's the thing. Here's the thing about Gaza. Shit has been going on since 2006, from what I remember. Back in 2006, I was in some protest I was against the Israelis. Yeah, I was a pro-Palestinian. All right. Perhaps at the time, 2006, I was in film school in New York. I had a friend who was Palestinian. He and I would just hang out, we'd smoke weed. The funny thing about him is he was super into reggae, or no, what's that stuff that's not reggae, but that's like boom, 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 dance hall. He liked dance hall. And he was dating a Jamaican girl who also went to Columbia. And then he was just like almost rasta'd out, which was hilarious, right? I remember someone was like, hey, we're going to some party or something. And one of my friends, he's black. He was like, hey, tell that Palestinian Jamaican nigga to bring some weed, right? And that was acceptable because he was indeed a Palestinian Jamaican nigga. So I think that he gave me a lot of perspective as to what it was like to be Palestinian. He wasn't from Gaza. He was from the West Bank. So I guess it was a little better. It wasn't as crowded, whatever, but he would still tell me about, you know, the fact that there's just snipers out there and they shoot kids, you know, just one, not a bunch of them, just one once in a while, just to keep the fear level up, you know, just the checkpoints, the fucking shitty treatment, the fucking, you know, a lot of stuff, you know. I'd sit and just, we'd like smoke weed every day and before class or whatever, and fucking just talk about shit, and he would end up talking about some of that stuff, you know. And I don't know, I get put a lot of things into perspective. So back then it was obvious, it was like, oh, this is awful, this is a humanitarian disaster, so on and so forth. Came in and did something called Operation Cast Lead, where they just leveled Gaza. Tens of thousands of people died. And then that was it. Just got memory hold. You know, probably because we were also in the middle of our war. So, you know, just like, we don't want to talk too much about casualties of war. You know, and then just go on any Wikipedia, whatever. Just go on there, Google it, you know, or DuckDuckGo or whatever based or cringe outlet you need to use. just look up the Gaza, just the conflict in Gaza with Palestine, or with Israel, right? And it's a list that's just like 2006, 2008, 2000. It's been going on for a long time, 10, 12, whatever. I mean, you know, four wars in the past 12 years or something, you know, just something ridiculous. Five wars? I don't know, whatever. Something ridiculous. It gets to the point where you're just like, I can't keep, you know, I mean, I guess in a way, you know, I'm just as guilty as anybody else of just being like, what am I going to do? And just checking out, right? Just not paying attention, because it's, after a while, you're just watching what seems to be slaughter, slow slaughter of people, you know? So that's not fun. I don't want to see that, especially if it's real. You want to see fake, quick slaughter. See, that's entertainment, because it's not real, but you don't want to really see it. That's sick. I don't know, to just be gleefully wishing for the death of children. That's crazy. People who are just, you know, like supposed to be. And I guess this goes back to the whole based cringe thing. People who you think were based end up being cringe, right? And like Ben Shapiro, for on some level, seemed based. He was against the vaccine mandates. He's against the tranny stuff. He's, you know, against the new feminism and the cultural Marxism, all that stuff. You think, oh, be a base. But then when it comes to Israel and we have to destroy all of them, you know, he's just like bad. You could just see the blood running out of his eyes and his face, his mouth, right? Just like calling for the destruction of people, the blood, wipe them all out. And it's hard to see that's, there's an element of, like, is it hard to see like Jesus looking at that and being like, you know, it's hard to really imagine that's what's going on there. You know, it's hard to see that there's this a goodness emanating from it. You know what I mean? When someone's like, you gotta kill them, you know, and they know that half of the people dying are children, and they know this, and they're like, it's, well, they put them, they shouldn't be there, or whatever it is their justification is, doesn't feel to me that it's like, like, you know, warm, glowing love thing, right? Which you would associate with good, the elements of good. It seems perhaps the other side, right? It's, that's why it's cringe. See, he was based, now he's cringe. Perhaps it's the yin yang thing. Perhaps the baseness, he was cringe inside the whole time. That's coming out, right? It's coming out. And it feels demonic, right? It feels like there's demons. It doesn't feel like something, you know, like a being of light and goodness would revel over. Seems bad. Seems like someone who's like, someone who's, you know, enjoys the killing of innocents, the spilling of innocent blood, and is happy about it. That seems like, it seems evil, you know? It seems, it's probably one of the definitions of it, right? Finding joy in the killing of innocents. That seems, that would be a good definition. I mean, you don't have to be, that's not the only thing you have to do to, you can't be like, well, I starved a bunch of kids, so I'm not evil, right? I'm not evil, because I would say that's probably worse in some ways, right? So you got, you know, this war going on past 20 years, 18 years, 15, whatever. It's been like decades. It's been decades of this, and maybe something's going to pop off. Maybe something, maybe it's World War III. I think everybody's talking about World War III. Everybody's afraid. World War III is coming. World War. Yeah. And I would argue that it's already here. It's been here. It's here. It's already here. You don't have to worry about. I mean, I honestly think that, okay, nukes. Some people don't think nukes are real. I'm going to just go ahead and say they are. Given we haven't had a giant world war. And the only way we could have a giant conventional world war like we did in the 20th century is if for some reason, you know, everybody decided not to use nukes. Because why wouldn't you? Because nukes are the great equalizer between armies. Like if somebody has a massive army and you have a small army, what you do is you just nuke them, right? You just nuke their army, nuke their cities, nuke their, just everybody. And then everybody will just start nuking each other, and then nobody wants that. So that's why I believe since the Cold War, right, the Cold War kind of laid the foundation of like, how do we fight this war without going hot, right? Like going fully hot. And the answer was little proxy wars everywhere, right? Proxy wars. You just fight little tiny wars with countries that don't have nukes. You don't have to worry about these pesky nuke things. You got nukes, I got nukes. We'll stay out of each other's way, but we'll pick this country instead. Okay, that's it. Problem now is that we're running out of proxy wars. The proxy wars are turning into hot wars, about to turn into hot wars between nuclear nations. And then when that happens, we'll see. Are we going to launch? It's going to be conventional warfare with nuclear powers. No one's going to use one. It seems like we're barreling towards, you know, the musing one. And maybe it won't be the 20th century concept that we have of mutually assured destruction, you know, though there probably is an element of that. Though I feel like if that happens, then, you know, whatever, game over. GG, as the kids say. There's no point in worrying about, you know, that's the thing. The end of the world, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? Hopefully you die. Right. Hopefully you're not living in some post-apocalyptic nightmare like The Road, where you have to dodge cannibal rapists, like people who want to rape your corpse and eat it or something, or eat it and then rape it. Or there's probably going to be a lot of variety in the corpse, the cannibal fucking industry. No, it probably won't be an industry, but it'll be a hobby in the time of The Road. Everything's gray, ashy, just everything tastes like ash. There's just snow everywhere. It's just, you're scrounging for bits of irradiated food as you think about just like a bucket of KFC or something. You know, you're just having these random thoughts like, oh man, remember all the food you wasted, the food you used to just throw in the trash can, you know, just be like, and just throw it. I'm full, and just throw away whole burritos or whatever, just chuck them in the trash can. And now here you are in a post-apocalyptic gray, ashy nightmare, scrounging for hopefully a burrito. Hopefully you find a burrito. God, I wish I had that burrito, you say to yourself as you scrounge for one in the trash. So, you know, that, but then, you know, there's, what's the point of worrying about that? Honestly, what are you going to do? You know? So I honestly, there is no, if you think about it, really no point in worrying about anything. What we can do as individuals is probably get our own government to stop supporting these other governments that are killing children. We should probably stop doing the killing of the children ourselves. In fact, we're probably in a very bad moral position to go around telling other countries to, hey, stop killing children, when that's what we've been doing. That's what, you know, that's what war ultimately is, killing children, right? And that's that whole, you know, remember the hippies? Remember the boomers who were the hippies, and they were all like, war is unhealthy for children and other living things, man. Hey, man, you can't be hurting kids, man, because the war is bad, man. And then they were like, yeah, look at everything, stop. Yeah, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. You know, they did that. And now they're all like, everybody must die. Let's turn the whole place to glass. That's those people back then did that, and now they're doing this. The thing I talked about before, I protested in 2003, the start of the Iraq war in San Francisco. It was a big protest. That's when I saw the first Antifa guys or whatever, you know, and I saw, it was wild. A lot of people at that protest, and that night I was with my friend Jeremy, who we were at his aunt's, right? And then it was a Jewish family. Nice American Jewish family, and they were yelling at us for, how could you protest the war? How could you do this or that? You know, and like, well, they're killing kids, basically. That's why. And their whole thing is, well, that protest, what if somebody, that's one guy was like, what if somebody needed dialysis and your protest stopped the dialysis? And I'm like, yes, that's very inconvenient, much like your child dying in a bombing, right? That's super inconvenient too. It's all inconvenient, you know. And you know, and I was a kid, I was like right out of college, so I was like, I didn't give a fuck, you know. When I look back, I could understand the point of why being an inconvenience, and you know, it being like the climate protesters, you know, blocking traffic and all that. I can see that's shitty, but also in retrospect, I think I was on the more morally just cause, honestly, because climate change isn't real, but the war being a corrupt thing by the bankers to get us involved in a permanent war state was a real thing in retrospect. Okay. And I remember I was like, oh yeah. I was, one of the things I was like, why should we have to pay taxes that go to spying bombs? Like, why, you know? And then I remember Jeremy's aunt yelling, because those bombs are protecting your freedom. That's what she said. Those bombs are protecting your freedom. And I think I just laughed. I think I laughed, which is probably why they didn't like me after that. But I think I just laughed because it was a really absurd statement. If you think about, those bombs are protecting your freedom. You're like, okay, that sounds like something you tell somebody who's giving you money and you buy bombs with them. And they're like, hey, I don't have like healthcare or the roads are shitty. What? And you go, those bombs are protecting your freedom. It's like, all right, the freedom to what? The freedom to give you money to keep bombing kids overseas? That's, I don't want to. Didn't we in the 70s already? And that's what I was like, there was pictures of them. There's pictures of them as hippies, whatever. And I remember like pointing at those pictures and being like, weren't you guys protesting war back then? And they're like, that was different. That bad. You know, and in retrospect, I can see perhaps there was some tribal loyalty, perhaps. You know, perhaps there was some, there's something to this whole thing about how our entire excursion in the Middle East, including Gulf War One, right? The first Gulf War was actually a sort of like neocon Zionist execution of a new world order. Possible. Makes, I mean, in retrospect, gee, it seems likely, seems interesting, you know. Or of course the alternative is like, no, there's nobody's planning anything. It's just there's these bad people and they hurt us. And now we have to kill every one of them. Now we have to just murder if they kill, we kill the children. We've got to torture them. We have to do everything. Everything goes. That just doesn't seem right. Ends justify the means as long as it's us. But when they do it, it's bad. We're good. They're bad. So if we do anything that could be seen as bad, it's not bad. It's good. That doesn't feel like good to me. It doesn't feel like good. This is like not a good pitch for me. I suppose it makes me feel better. You know, if you were the person getting vengeance and blood, it makes you feel better. Does it? I don't know. I am too, maybe I'm too sensitive. Like I have emotions. You know, I can't help but be like, God, what a piece of shit. What a piece of shit I am for wanting that. I wouldn't want anyone to think that about me or my loved ones. Why would I do that? Like, you know, so I suppose it's a form of empathy, something like that. Perhaps that's how I know I'm not autistic or a sociopath or something, is that I have the capacity to feel that. And then that also means if I then decide to be like, nah, turn it off and ignore it, I'm even more culpable and guilty, right? So then what? Right. This is perhaps why eating from the tree of knowledge of good and evil was the fall of man. You know, that's probably why in the story of the Garden of Eden, it's like you could be in this paradise where you don't know anything else, or you could eat from this apple where you do, you know what's going on in the Gaza Strip. Take what, you know. I don't know. I think about going back to film school, my friend, so my Palestinian friend, he made a movie, and he shot it in Palestine. I'll be honest, I was too big of a pussy to go. Like, I was like, I ain't go to Palestine, bro. I went to Jamaica, but I ain't going to Palestine. I'm not, you know, didn't have a good feeling about it. Had a couple other friends go, you know, great. One dude was an Australian, another dude was an American. The American dude had a book just on Palestine. It wasn't even a political book. It was just a book about Palestine. They fucking stopped him at the airport and sent him home. Like, he couldn't even come in the country. American citizen couldn't come in the country because he had a book, okay, with the word Palestine on it. So that was 2009, 10, whatever. That was yeah, somewhere around. It's like, so you see, this shit's been going on for a while. And then I think about, and he made a really good movie. Really good movie. He got, you know, the whatever selects or honors or whatever the thing they give you, you know, and good for him. I think, you know, and the movie's great. It's like basically about this little boy who he is basically really loves this dog. And then the dog ends up killing this gazelle that was meant to be a present for somebody. And then he had to end up killing the dog or something like that. I mean, it's just a very sad, messed up story. Right. And it didn't even, it's not like he had the Israelis there. I mean, there was obviously the specter of them, but it wasn't really about that. But it's really just about the shitty life, the shitty choices. The shitty choices he had to make, whatever shitty things, you know, and or maybe the dog had rabies or something. Like it wasn't that he had to kill the dog for revenge. It was like he had to put the dog down. It was like an old yeller type thing. Anyways, whatever. It was very like he's trying to evoke empathy, right, for the kid, but then the kid is put in a moral quandary via the viewer. It's good stuff. I think about another classmate of mine who was an American. What are they? I guess he's an Orthodox. He always wore a yarmulke, but he wore like button down. It wasn't like Hasidic, but he was like, I mean, he was a Democrat. He ran the Student Democrats Association, whatever. He was like out there all the time on a microphone talking about how we need healthcare or whatever. But anyways, he was also very super Zionist, clearly. And he would, his movie was awful. It was set in a bunker, I guess, when Hezbollah or somebody was bombing Haifa, and there are all these Israelis, and some of them are Americans, and the Americans are like, we got to go out there and kill a man. And then the Israelis are like, no, you don't know what it's like, because we've been here, you know, we got to wait for it to get really bad, and then we'll kill them. It's essentially the conflict of the movie. The conflict, there's not one person in that bunker was like, hey, is this at all bad that we're there? Are we the baddies? Did you ever see that sketch? It's a Mitchell and Webb sketch where they're like decked out in Nazi gear and stuff. And one of them comes to the other one and he's like, I've been thinking, are we the baddies? He's like, we've got skulls as insignias, is it? You know, he's, it's like, nobody did that in the movie, which would have been, I would have at least been like, all right, at least he put that in there, right? Like at least he, because no, the conflict was about two people on one side of the conflict, two people on the, there's never this thing of like, hey, should we be killing those kids? What, it's the argument is like, we should kill them now. And the other one's like, no, we should kill them later. Like, we should let them grow up and then we'll kill them. Right. That was sort of, and I'm of course being facetious and, it wasn't literally that, but that's what it seemed like to me. Right. Given the fact that this guy wanted to make a movie about it. Right. Not a full length movie. Thank God. But, 10 minutes was excruciating. I would have rather been in that bomb shelter with those people than watch another 10 minutes of that. But so here's the thing about this guy. Okay, so we were graduate students, so that meant we were given the opportunity to be TAs for the undergrad classes, right? And so he did one, I did one, I think I did Chinese cinema. I was the graduate student instructor for Chinese cinema, and my class would come in after his class. I think he was doing a comedy class, like his or whatever. One day must have been after one of his comedy lectures or whatever, but I look up and I saw that he wrote tragedy plus time equals comedy. And then I think I wrote under that even the Holocaust with a question mark. You know, I think we did not get along. Anyways, but seriously, I mean, but that's one of the things, you know, that made me his enemy. That made him my enemy from that point on. No, I was like, because this is a terribly unfunny person, you know, a terribly unfunny person who has no sense of humor, especially about the thing he super cares about. He really, really cares, right? He really, really cares about Israel and Zionism and all that stuff. And that, and then he's telling these students who paid for an Ivy League education, you know, he writes on the board, tragedy plus time equals comedy, right? Like he's telling them that, and he's a hypocrite because he can't do that himself. He can't do that, right? He can't laugh at a joke like, if somebody says something about Jews, you go, hey, that's not funny. I had an uncle who died in the Holocaust. You know, he got drunk and fell out of the guard tower. Like, you know, you do that, he wouldn't go, ha ha ha. I don't think he would. I don't think, by the way, my Jewish friends growing up taught me that joke. Like that, the craziest Jew jokes I learned from Jews. I mean, honestly. And then those same Jews, I think, are very upset that I remember them, perhaps. I don't know. Not all of them. Not all. Okay. So listen, I think this World War III or whatever really has been going on since 9/11. I think that was the turning point of it. That's when the sort of, the late 90s brought all the media companies, they repealed. So Clinton repealed like Glass-Steagall and all these other acts. He put in the media, I forgot what it's called, Media and Communications Act or whatever, basically allowed these giant monolithic media companies you see now. That's why Disney owns everything. That's why there's only like four media companies now. They all consolidated, right? So that to me is a form of the new fascism, the mishmash of communism and fascism that we see now that has a tech bent. I like to call it dot communism. You know, it's just, it's a new thing. It's not, it's also, I've been reading this guy, Alexander Dugin, and he talks about how it's really about this globalism. It's globalism versus traditionalism, or a unipolar world versus a multipolar world, you know, the Great Reset versus the Great Awakening, right? Like a godless sort of atheistic crusade to make everybody the same, to eliminate the distinction between man and woman, man and God, man and machine, to eliminate all distinctions so that we're all one and that we all can be controlled by an artificial intelligence or some overmind that was constructed by man, a Tower of Babel of sorts that is more about our minds and our souls than a physical object, right? Could see that coming. The book Snow Crash kind of talks about that, you know, like, so I think this war has been going on at least for 20 years, arguably longer. I mean, really, really, really what it seems like, it's the capture of the military industrial complex by the bankers, who have in turn also captured the political apparatus, which in turn has captured the media apparatus, you know, so on and so forth. Yeah, it's ultimate. The capturing of all these industries to create a perpetual war state, right? And to create a sort of neo-feudalistic plutocracy, maybe like a rule of the rich military, the rich security elite, the industrial. That's one of the famous clips of Assange, right? Right before he went to jail, he talked about, you know, the war in Afghanistan. It's not about winning. That's why it doesn't make any sense what we're doing. But it does make sense if you think of it as money laundering. That's what it is. It's all money laundering. That's like all these wars. It's an opportunity to just take taxpayer money from Europe and America and funnel it into the pockets of the security elite. Okay. And it's an international thing. It's a global thing. It's all of them. Okay. Well, all right. So anyway. So anyways, I mean, arguably, I say the war goes back all the way to the Korean War. Okay, I was talking about the Korean War a lot last time. Eisenhower had a message. President Eisenhower had a message for the people as he was going away. He was like, beware the military industrial complex. He basically told us that. Eisenhower was president from 1953 to 61. So that's the Korean War to the beginning of Vietnam. So he got to see, he fought in World War II, which was supposed to be the good war, and the war to end all wars. And all of a sudden, now we're in Korea fighting communism. Now we're going to be in, Indochina, French Vietnam. They saw the French fighting the Vietnamese commies in the 50s. And then we were like, oh, we got to get in there. We can't let commie, because we lost China. We saw China as like, oh, we lost it. And then we had this domino theory. They're like, we're going to lose one and another, you know? And so we're like, we got to get in there. And so Eisenhower saw this and he was like, yeah, I think it's really these guys who are trying to get rich off of this. It's probably, you know, what it is. I think, and hopefully the next guy, you know, hopefully the next guy gets in and he can do something about it. Of course, the next guy was JFK. Okay, so the next guy is JFK, and he was like, we need to disband the CIA and end the war, and then he got killed, right? He got killed by a crazy lone man from, who was trained by the communists. Yeah, that's who did it. Not the people who ended up going to war in Vietnam for 10 years. Not the people who ended up, you know, doing all these proxy wars throughout the 80s, 90s, got us into Iraq again. 2001 comes along. You know, we were bombing Iraq the whole time. We had the Kosovo thing in the 90s. We also had some incursions to Haiti, Panama, you know, all that stuff. Then 9/11 happens, and it's just, oh, we're going to Afghanistan, we're going to Iraq. And then, of course, you know, we got that going for a while. People weren't happy about the no WMDs and the torture and all that stuff, the Abu Ghraib and you got the Chelsea Manning putting out all this stuff about how, you know, a lot of the info about the Iraq war was about how we have no idea what we're doing. It's all written down there. It's all there. We also have the Afghanistan papers that came out that showed, you know, yeah, we don't have any idea that we're doing, which is very similar to the Pentagon papers that came out during Vietnam that showed that, oh yeah, we have no idea what we're doing. Just keep capturing hills and getting them, taking them. They get taken back. We capture them again. Just keep doing it. Why are we doing this? There's no objective. Yeah. We're just going to keep this machine rolling. Okay. Just stop asking questions. And we go, you know, and I would say that every war has been one of those. Every war has been an opportunity to make some cash, sweet, sweet cash, right? Blood money, really what it is, what we're funding. Isn't that nice? And that's the thing, you know, and I'm talking about war. I know, like, war sucks. War kills the kids. It's terrible. But you know what else, what I think is worse, honestly, is the sanctions. We sanction them. If you don't want to go to war, we go, we'll be nice and we'll sanction you. But that's really starving kids. You're starving the kids when you sanction places. And I don't know, you know, if I had a kid and I had to pick between starving to death and dying after a while, and this is crazy, I'm sure, but I think parents would understand. So I think I might pick just them dying right out. Rather them just die right out and go to heaven than starve in front of me. Okay. For how long? How they just watch helplessly as they starve. And you could see why, if you did that to people, you made them starve. So they would be very angry. They would be very angry and be like, you know, we would prefer war. At least we'll go out on our feet, right? We would prefer that, because otherwise it's a siege, right? Which apparently is supposed to be illegal or something under the Geneva Convention, but nothing about economic sanctions, of course. And of course, not like we obey the Geneva Convention, because we tortured people. We were like, what does it say on that? That we came up with that. What does it say? Don't torture people. No, we're gonna. We'll just call it something else. We don't really care what you say. We're gonna do what we want. Okay. This thing only applies to people that we can fuck up, but you can't fuck us up. So, like, that, you know, whatever. Yeah, rules. We'll follow the rules. Yeah, we'll follow that. Pow! Those are my rules. Anyway, you know, I mean, what would you choose? What would you do? Right? You got your kid there. Would you rather the kid just get killed outright or starve for weeks? You know, I don't know. You know, that's not an easy, is that based or cringe? That's not an easy thing to really answer. And that's the thing we're doing to the people around the world on our dime, our money. We're just giving, every time you buy something, a little bit of that money goes to the government, a little bit of that money goes to buying weapons to kill kids. So that's, you know, or starve them. Somehow we need a lot of money to starve the kids too. That's what we're going to do. So, you know, yay. Yay. I mean, so again, you know, I suppose, like, what are you going to do? What are you going to do, Matt? What are you going to do? Can't really, you know, we can't go over there, right? Yeah. I mean, I guess you could write your congresspeople. I mean, I think the thing you got to look at is what happened with the last anti-war movement. The last serious anti-war movement seemed to be in the 60s and 70s, which the boomers did, right? They did the whole with the stab. Yeah. What? So I think maybe the key is to make some good tunes, some good jams, good jams. Of course, the corporations are all captured. You know, the media companies have captured all the recorded labels and all that. So it's really impossible to probably make dissenting music, but I believe it's out there, because, you know, protest music, dissenting music is some of the most powerful, you know, resonant music out there. So it's probably going to happen. I think so. Ultimately, I do think it's culture. The war can only be fought in the culture. A culture war. The culture war that everybody, sure, has been talking about on a political level, like about the trannies and whatever. Yes, there's that, but I think there's larger culture war. That's why I, you know, tongue in cheek, I say the meme war, right? I talk about how I'm in a meme game and a meme and a triple elite memes. Wait, I think if I go this way, I go one of these ways, if I turn, I got the logo up there, triple elite memes. Well, what? You know, I, why as a middle-aged man, I take making cartoon pictures so seriously on the internet, because that is the battleground that we can make a difference in, the culture war. Just like with the boomers, they had their musicians, they had their art, they had their music, their poetry, they essentially created a decentralized culture shift, right? LSD had the tune in drop out thing, you had your Woodstock, you had that, you know, and you could argue there's terrible things that came out of that. Yes, terrible things that came out of the drugs, blown out minds, this and that, but there are also positive things that came out of that. The questioning of the status quo, the establishment, military industrial complex, the youth caring about, you know, what the adults in their society were saying and how that had to change and how they felt they had the power to change it. Right now, I feel like that energy and movement has been captured by the establishment. And that's why you have these, you have training kids and you have, you know, a lot of children being involved in this cultural Marxism, this political battle that's being foisted on kids, right? So the kids are starving and being killed overseas. And meanwhile, those kids here are being mutilated and brainwashed, right? Thankfully, there are a lot of base kids as well. Kids are now homeschool is where you're not weird, right? If you go to regular school, back in my day when you were in regular school, when you're in public school and you met a homeschool kid, the homeschool kid was weird. But now it seems like it's the other way around. Now it's everything's on its head now, right? Like everything, the conservative establishment was who the liberals were rebelling against now, and now it's the conservative kids who are rebelling against liberal establishment. That's just what it is. You got guys like Nick Fuentes who basically, you know, cultivated like 17-year-olds, you know, college kids or whatever, young people to become paleo conservatives, right? To become, you know, Christian fascism or Christian nationalism in the nation, America First, like all this stuff that used to be what maybe their grandparents were into. And maybe that's just the way of the world, right? We do the things that our grandparents liked. That's it. The parents are lame. Grandparents. Yeah. So I don't know. I think there is maybe something to be learned about what the boomers did, what our parents did, and then what their grandparents did, what our grandparents did, and the interaction between those two generations in order to figure out how to get into the next phase, you know, whether that's the fourth turning or whatever. This shit has got to... We got to get it past this. This is kind of boring. It's like reruns. We've been having the same reruns forever. The boomers had this good thing with the anti-war thing, and then they became really pro-war, really weird. It's a weird arc. It's a dark, it's a turning. It started out very positive and became very negative. So perhaps it can go the other way, right? Just like the based cringe yin-yang. We're in a pretty cringy time. Perhaps out of that cringeness, a based element will come. And just like I've talked about forming a parallel society, you got to form parallel society and just mock these people relentlessly. You know, that ties in to the culture war, which is our battleground, right? Unless you want to go sign up, go over there and lend your body to whatever cause, you know, there is also the realm of the mind, right? Which is ever more present with the internet moving ever faster, faster than bodies can move, right? And there is a war. There's a war for it. You know, I think that's a real thing. So there you go. That you gotta like, I think it's sort of like the Timothy Leary thing, right? Yeah. You drop out, tune in, tune out. No, tune out, drop out, whatever it was. Whatever it was, basically like take acid and just check out, right? And there's some truth to it and some bullshit, right? Like, so I think that there is something to be said about opting out of society, right? Opting out of this sort of endless stream of war porn, and concern and worrying and emotions, that we're just like hooked to these machines, hooked to the information. We just, and we feel good for how easy it is to surf an hour on your phone versus sitting down, just writing down your thoughts or something, right? Just sitting down and doing some exercise, or how, you know, just think about that, right? It's the easier path, right? And perhaps it's our task to claw ourselves out of that hell, right? And change the culture for the better, to wake people up. Perhaps there is a great awakening coming, you know, and perhaps, you know, and not in the, I think there's an RFK thing, the hashtag great awakening or whatever. Like, I don't know what the, I don't know what the kids are talking about with this stuff, but I just mean that people will, just like they did, you know, just like they did in the 70s, you know, perhaps people will wake up. Not that they did any better in the 80s and 90s and up to now, but perhaps that was just the first step. And maybe this is the next step. Maybe this is a generational process and we're only cogs in that machine, right? Moving forward. Okay. Well, thank you very much for listening to the Rogen Kim cast. If you can, go on to my Twitter at Rogen Kim and follow everybody that I follow. No, don't do that. That could be a nightmare. Follow my friends on Twitter that you see. TEM members, follow them. Find us on Spaces. Just follow us and look up on Spaces and join the Spaces. You want to talk? You want to talk? You want to talk? Come on to Spaces. We'll talk. You could just drift in. It'll be fine. We'll fill you in on all the lore and everything will be fine. You could say your piece. You might be called a retard. Just depends on how you answer certain things and how you handle yourself. But everything's going to be fine. Come on to Spaces and join us. Okay. Thank you very much for listening to the Rogen Kim cast. I appreciate you once again. And until next time. Goodbye.